Great. Thank you very much for coming. So I will talk about devices that look something like this. So this is a semiconductor nanowire, which is the centerpiece of the whole device. It's made of indium antimonide. And these are electrical contacts which are superconducting. And this fine grid is a lot of electrostatic gates, we call them. So they are used to tune locally density of electrons in these nanowires. And so by biasing these fine array of gates to different potentials, we can engineer potentials such that there are several isolated chunks of the wire, which we call quantum dots. And those can be tunnel coupled, and they can also be coupled to the superconductor. And so with these basic ingredients, our aim is to indeed emulate Kitaev model in this particular experiment, but more broadly explore the potential of such solid state systems for quantum simulation. So since this program brings together condensed matter and AMO, experimentalists, this is how you can understand what we're trying to do. So on this condensed matter side, we have these solid state systems represented by this, for example. And then AMO people look at this and say, oh, that's neat. Walked over to the AMO side and they say, well, maybe we can do something like that, right? And the AMO people come up with these elaborate beautiful experiments like cold atoms and optical lattices. And then we look at that as condensed matter people, experimentalists, theorists, and we say, oh, that's great. Maybe we can do something like that. And this is what the talk will be about. So in fact, we will talk about eventually three coupled solid state systems, but we think of them as artificial atoms, right? These quantum dots have quantized energy levels. They're like artificial atoms, although they consist of millions of atoms, of course. So our efforts are in Pittsburgh, at the University of Pittsburgh. So this is how the lab looks. It has dilution refrigerators, which we need to create these low temperatures in the range of millikelvin. And this is my group. And all of the data I'm going to show, except for a couple of slides on Majorana, is from Xiaoen Su, who is my graduate student, has been in the lab since before the lab was there, when it was an empty room. So he's doing great. And nanowires come from Eric Bakker's group in the Netherlands. And we have great theory support locally from David Pecker and also Andrew Daly at Strathclyde. So these nanowires, let me introduce them a little bit. They are amazing material, artificially produced. So they are single crystal cylinders, which are a few microns long, maybe 2-3 microns long, and 100 nanometers in diameter, single crystal, so essentially no defects, no crystalline defects inside the material. And they're grown in this metal organic vapor phase epitaxy process in Eric Bakker's group. Here are the details of the fabrication. And these are the materials that were also used in some of the original Majorana fermion experiments. This is the exact same material. And so for that, what we needed was a one-dimensional system, which is a nanowire. And then the choice of semiconductor, indium antimonide, was due to the strong spin-orbit interaction in that material. It's the strongest of the 3-5 semiconductor family. So that's a very favorable material for Majorana experiments, according to the prescriptions in these important prolific papers for us, these recipes that predicted the PS4 ingredients produced Majorana fermions. And these are also the ingredients that we are going to use in our emulator of the Kitaev chain. So there are a lot of similarities between the sort of the bulk Majorana experiment and the discrete chain Majorana experiments. I will show you.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So I see a whole bunch of needles, I guess, sticking from the surface, yeah. And how do you move them to your device?
Oh, yeah. So indeed, they grow as this forest, and then we literally come in and we take one of them and we put them on a different substrate with all those gates.
And it sticks.
Yeah. So van der Waals forces make it stick. Yeah. So then we get something like this. So we prefabricate these metal electrodes, and then we take a nanowire from the chip where they grow like a forest, like needles, and we put it down where we want it, and then we cover it with these metals for the electrical transport measurement. And so this is an example of an experiment where we do study Majorana fermions in a kind of a bulk regime, so not in a discrete chain model, but in a bulk phase in a nanowire. But the differences are may appear subtle from far away. For these experiments, we engineer the topological phase in this region underneath the superconductor. So it's covered by the superconductor. Superconductor induces correlations in the semiconductor by proximity, and those are the strongest directly underneath. And then we use these wider gates to tune the bulk chemical potentials. And so one example of our work that we recently put on archive is that we mapped out by measuring zero bias peaks where we think the topological phase is in the space of this gate voltage and magnetic field. So this is the magnetic field axis, and this is the gate voltage axis, and these dots mark the onset points of a zero bias conductance peak, which we associate with the signature of Majorana fermions. And this red line is a prediction of a very simple model, simple theoretical model. This square root formula predicts this curve.
So what kind of Skinnerbeck coupling is supposed to be in this wire?
Rushbar.
So why is it Rushbar actually?
Yeah, the symmetry, so Rushbar requires some broken symmetry, and the symmetry here is broken by, first of all, a symmetry in the device itself. So there is a piece of metal lying on top of the wire.
So it's got an intrinsic Skinnerbeck coupling, something you induce?
Well, there is an intrinsic, atomic spin orbit.
Which can't be Rushbar, right?
Which is not Rushbar. But in the band structure, Rushbar effect arises only when there is a structural asymmetry. So in a perfectly cylindrical wire in vacuum, sort of spherical wire in vacuum, there will be no Rushbar effect. Rushbar effect requires some electric field or strain or otherwise broken symmetry. And this nanowire is lying on a substrate and it's covered by metal. In fact, it's half covered. So it's a very asymmetric system. And
do you need spin orbit coupling or is it a large G factor that we need?
We do need spin orbit coupling. And the reason for that, so G factor also helps by bringing this point down in field. We can reach the large Zeeman splitting at lower magnetic fields. But spin orbit plays the following role. So if Zeeman splitting exceeds the superconducting gap, superconductivity is destroyed. That's the Pauli limit, and there should be no superconductivity anymore. But because spin orbit mixes singlet and triplet a little bit, that allows superconductivity to persist beyond this sort of simple Pauli limit.
So you just need to be able to flip the spin, so by any means, right?
So spin orbit is a very convenient way of doing that. Yeah. And this is also what the Kitaev chain model proposals are based on dots. Okay, so this is a summary plot, but the experimental data, which I will also be showing you a lot, is in this talk, consists of these color maps, and these are conductance color maps. So what is measured here is something very simple. Current is passed from one contact to the other. In this experiment, this contact is not superconducting, it's palladium. And this contact is superconducting, so this niobium tinitride alloy. We measure conductance as a function of different parameters. For example, here in these three plots, gate voltage here is set to three different positions that are color-coded. So this color is here, this color is here, and this color is here. And the color inside the plot is conductance on the scale, so it's some fraction of conductance quantum, which tells you that you are in a tunneling regime. And this tunneling regime is achieved by setting this gate just outside of the superconductor to a negative potential, such that it depletes electrons here, creates a tunneling barrier. And so this part of the device becomes a tunneling probe. Think of it as an STM tip, but which is engineered into the device. And this part is the part of interest investigated as a topological superconductor or anything else you like. And so the middle plot here, which is also cutting through the middle of this plot, has this zero bias peak, and it onsets at finite field. At zero field, there is this induced gap. And this zero bias peak is what we explore as the onset of some kind of a bound state at this interface right next to the tunnel barrier that gives rise to a little bit higher conductance, and which is, you know, we explore it as a Majorana fermion.
So the magnetic field is out of the plane?
So the magnetic field is along the nanowire in this experiment, but we can also rotate it. So the prediction of these basic models, those two 2010 papers, is that when the magnetic field is perpendicular to the spin orbit field, you have this maximum effect. So this mixing of singlet and triplet is the most efficient by spin orbit coupling. If the magnetic field is aligned with the spin orbit field, the effect is zero. So spin orbit is completely inefficient in preserving superconductivity beyond the Pauli limit and entering this topological regime. And so we believe spin orbit field is actually pointing this way by the various symmetry concerns. And so when we orient the field along this direction, this zero bias feature goes away. And when we orient the field along the nanowire, it is there.
Sorry, maybe just to retreat my question. So suppose you just have a magnetic field and zero spin orbit coupling, but at the interface you're allowed to flip the spin. So will it be enough for you to achieve Majorana fermion?
Well, we have to know exactly how the spin is flipped, but I think this is essentially this is some form of spin orbit coupling, I would say.
Because at the interface, you almost always have symmetry breaking that allows you to flip the spin. So how do you know?
From my spintronic days, there are several different mechanisms in which spin orbit comes in. So there's a Dyakonov-Perel, and there is a Elliot Jaffe, and this sounds like what you're describing. It's just a different mechanism by which spin orbit coupling manifests.
So I guess my main question is, how do you know what kind of spin orbit? Is it an assumption, or is it a result of some experiment?
This is a result of several previous experiments that we've done. So before these people like Luchin and others stormed into our lives with these Majorana ideas, we were working on spin qubits in the same wires, and they were based on spin orbit states. So we studied extensively the spin orbit strength and the orientation, and this knowledge predates this Majorana work, but it's also consistent with the Majorana work. Yeah, there's a lot of evidence for relatively strong spin orbit in these materials.
Yeah. Sorry, I have another question. So how do you get the chemical potential? Is it obtained as a fit, or can you convert the gate potential?
So we convert this axis into this axis by some lever arm, which we get from data like this, but when there is a gate on this axis, there are some resonances that shift with respect to gate in this source-drain bias direction, and from that lever arm we convert this axis. So now a discussion can be had whether that is the appropriate chemical potential, but this is sort of the best we can do with just directly mapping the experimental data. Yeah, so this axis is the source drain bias, so voltage applied between here and here. And so if a feature is at finite bias, for example, this gap, you can read off its energy sort of from the bias axis. And if it's a zero bias, then it's at the Fermi level, That's where my run is supposed to be. So when we shift this gate around, we find regimes where there is no zero bias peak. So this yellow dashed line is not crossed by anything left and right of the middle plot. And that sort of confines the space where zero bias peak exists. And it seems like a simple thing, but took several years to map this out because some improvements needed to be made in the quality of devices and so on. Okay, let me move on. Actually, I was really excited about this talk also for the reason that it is like my first talk in 4 years where I was not centered on Majorana. But I didn't manage to go very far. But let me talk about the Kitaev chain, so which is my attempt to escape from the Majorana business. Okay, I think this audience needs not much introduction to the Kitaev chain, but I just want to put this slide out here to sort of highlight the differences between the bulk regime, where we talk about chemical potentials in a one-dimensional system that need to be tuned and magnetic field directions, and this discrete situation where under P-wave coupling, Majorana states are supposed to appear on the bound sides of some chain, right? And so this is the philosophy that we want to take in this next sequence of experiments, where we ask if we can build a verbatim Kitaev chain, so engineer sites and control their couplings and couple them to some condensates of superconductor. So the existing experiment that maybe comes closest to this is this Yazdani experiment, where they put magnetic atoms, a chain of them, on the surface of a superconductor, lead. And in this chain, they've observed states at the boundaries of the chain by tunneling from an STM tip. So this is a chain of atoms. It's as close as it gets to the Kitaev chain. Maybe one difference between what we're trying to do and this is that this is not a very controllable chain, in the sense that the atoms sit in their predefined positions, defined by some coupling between iron and the substrate. And so you get what you get. So you get Majoranas, and then that's it. You cannot, kill them, tune them much. At least so far, I don't know of ways to do that. Maybe they'll come up with that. And so with semiconductors, which are a very tunable material, we can explore the model and make it into different regimes, engineer interactions, and maybe take it further than what we can do with sort of the bulk philosophy. And indeed, there were a couple of proposals, these two papers from 2012, that proposed to use quantum dots for this purpose. And these are our motivations. This paper from Sal and Dasarma proposes the following chain. So these are quantum dots, these are gates that tune them, and there are superconductors kind of in between. So this is a very nice proposal, but not our favorite from the experimental point of view. And the reason for that is because if you look at one of the superconductors, you have to go both left and right. So you need to do a cross-Tandreyev reflection process to couple this into a chain. And so this cross-Tandreyev reflection process is a kind of a bit of an enigma. I think it's still not clear whether it exists or not, and certainly not clear how to control it and how to make it the dominant one. So we didn't want to rely on this process. And so this is another approach by Fulgan co-authors, Anton and others, where this looks very similar to what we already have in the lab, right? So this is a nanowire. These are the superconductors. And these puddles here are quantum dots are here, and these are barriers. And these quantum dots are sort of coupled directly inside the semiconductor, and superconductors are put on the side. So this is the proposal that more closely related to what we're trying to realize. And so the philosophy is to start with a Kitaev chain that maybe is also connects to our Majorana work, but eventually, if that works well, explore these kind of semiconductor systems for maybe other models, some interesting models that the community can come up with, depending on how well this works, say, with the Kitaev chain.
So what is the width of the superconductor as compared to the superconducting coherence length of those strips, or like
here,
the sizes of, no, in the second proposal. So what are the sizes of your dots like as compared to the coherence length?
Well, so the coherence length in a superconductor is not very relevant in a semiconductor. In a semiconductor...
No, but I'm thinking in terms of the just the strips that you have for the superconductor, how wide are they? I mean, how do they compare to the coherence length?
I mean, this width is a few coherence lengths, I would say, and but it's an infinite size material, so you can, you know, it goes forever here.
Yeah,
but what is important is the coherence length in a semiconductor, the induced one. So that is longer. That is several hundred nanometers.
And so the region that is in between those strips, that's the gate there just controls the coupling between the quantum dots?
Here or here?
Here, in between the two quantum dots.
Here.
Right, the gap.
Yeah, so that's just in this proposal, the idea is that this gate controls the coupling between
the
dots.
Quantum dots,
yeah.
And that's all that it does.
Right. And then you also want to control coupling from the superconductor to the dot. So in the theoretical proposal, they do that by having a phase between these two split electrodes. But you know, we have a different way of.
So what I'm trying to understand is if the superconductivity extends across, in that region that is in between the gap of.
Here, this is a tunnel barrier. Yeah.
So there is no superconductivity.
Well, I mean, there is some kind of a Josephson coupling possible.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in a tunneling regime, though.
Okay.
Okay. So in addition to the quantum simulation motivation, there is the topological quantum computing motivation. Especially in the last year or so, there's been a boom of proposals that rely on quantum dots coupled to superconductors to do topological quantum computing. For example, look at these two papers from just a couple of months ago. So these pink areas labeled 1, 2, 3 in these devices are quantum dots on the left. And on the right, also pink, these circles are quantum dots. These are, you can see gates here. These lines are gates. And these blue shapes in both are superconductors. So these are the same ingredients to build topological qubits, to couple them, to read them out, and to perform manipulation, braiding, relying on quantum dots coupled to superconductors. So I think that there's a strong motivation to study such circuits from the topological qubit point of view. And even just having two dots is already useful, because there's this proposal which tells you that having two islands of superconductor on a nanowire, that's in principle enough to perform a fusion measurement, which is sort of would gain additional evidence for Majorana fermions beyond spectroscopy, what we do now, right? So some initial steps to Majorana quantum state manipulation. So by playing with these gates, opening and closing them in the right sequence, you can try to do fusion with the two dots. So understanding these devices has broad motivation. And so what I'm going to show you today is data from two devices. One of the devices, this is the same device, copied twice, has two superconducting contacts, like that, kind of in a Josephson junction geometry. And there's an array of gates underneath. These gates can be used to define either one quantum dot coupled to a superconductor, and the other superconductor is then serves as a tunneling probe. Or we can make two quantum dots, one coupled to the left, one coupled to the right, with a tunnel barrier in between. And this middle one is already on archive. We call it Andreev molecules. And we also started working with this triple quantum dot device, where now there are three superconducting contacts, and there are three dots sort of stuck in between, each coupled to its own superconductor. Okay. So let me start with a single dot and understand what this atom is, right? So in cold atoms, we know, you know, you put a chain of rubidiums or strontiums, and you know, we know the atomic states. What are the atomic states here? They are the Andreev bound states. What are the Andreev bound states? Well, you have to think about a bulk superconductor coupled to a normal, non-superconducting island of small dimensions with perhaps with some charging energy or some orbital energy level spacing u of its own. But then this coupling, gamma s, to the superconductor induces states, these red ones, these are the Andreev bound states, inside the superconducting gap of the bulk. So the energy diagram is like this. These are the single particle energy levels of the quantum dot. In the middle here is the Fermi level. And so around Fermi level, with some particle hole symmetry, you have these resonances, which are the Andreev bound states, induced by coupling from a superconductor, so sort of many-body induced states. Behind them is Andreev reflection. You can also think of it as an electron going into the dot, hole coming back, and producing these states. Now, what is measured in experiment is transport. And so what we do is we add a particle to the dot, and then we extract particle on the other side. And by doing that, we perform the transitions between the ground state of the dot with n electrons and an excited state with n plus 1 particles. And those transitions correspond to the transitions between the ground state Andreev level and the excited state Andreev level. And so we see the energy difference between those levels. And so for that, it's important to understand what could be the states in a single dot. That happens to depend on the parity of the number of electrons that are already on the dot. So think of it this way. If there is an even number of electrons on the dot, then the ground state would be a singlet. So when you add a particle to that, you're going into a doublet. You can add a spin up or a spin down, right? Very simple. So you go from singlet to doublet. Singlet is your ground state, doublet is your excited state. If you are in a regime where a particle has an odd number of states, then your ground state can be a doublet. Your ground state can be have a spin. So then it's like an Anderson impurity, like a Shiba. Can give rise to a Shiba state coupled to a superconductor. And so then the ground state is a doublet, the excited state is a singlet, and the transition is from doublet to singlet. That's the energy difference that we will see in transport. Now there is a phase diagram that you can plot. If you increase this coupling, then eventually when the coupling is very strong, the ground state is always a singlet. That's the point of this diagram. So you think of it this way. If there is an impurity here on this dot, as an unpaired spin, you couple it to a reservoir of a superconductor, eventually it gets screened, that spin gets screened, and the ground state becomes a singlet. So this is what happens here. And there is some kind of a phase transition, where if you lower the coupling, you start resolving this as an isolated Shiba state, and that's this region. And this epsilon naught is the single particle chemical potential on the dot. So this transition can be seen experimentally, but it's been seen by many groups, but I will show our data just to calibrate the future works. Next slides. So we make a single dot using this kind of potential. So we tune these three gates next to this superconductor, such that we can find our electrons here. And this barrier is higher, so this superconductor serves as our tunnel probe. And this one is the one that we couple weaker or stronger to the dot. So with this gate S. So in a side view, it looks like this. And scanning through this diagram looks like this. So again, it's color-coded. So here on the right, in the blue, is the strongly coupled regime where the ground state is always a singlet. And you see Andreev bound states inside the superconducting gap wiggling around as we change the chemical potential. So they adjust their energy in some fashion. Then when we reach this critical point here, this wiggle and this wiggle touch and make this two touching half loops kind of shape. And if we keep going, the half loops go through each other and make this full loop in the middle. So this region here is the region of odd parity. So this is the region where there is a doublet ground state, where there is a kind of a spin, well-defined spin on the dot. And the regions outside are the even parity. Those are where we have a singlet state. So these kind of resonances is our measurements. So this is what how we can detect these Andreev bound states on these dots.
How do you tune the tunneling?
This is just an electrical potential on one of the gates that makes this potential barrier higher and lower. And so I guess I can also use this slide to show that this is also slightly different than the theoretical proposal where the dot was under the superconductor. Here it's just next to the superconductor. Yeah?
This question is, why don't I see the superconducting gap of S1?
It is not a stupid question. It's a great question. It turns out that this niobium tinitride is also used in Majorana work, is a soft gap superconductor, meaning that there is some density of states inside the gap. So there are some BCS features, but there is some conductance everywhere. And this is the reason. And I will show you the model where we fit these to explain it. Yeah. So this is something we have to sort of reckon with and take it into account. The great thing about this soft gap is that it can show you directly the spectrum of Andreev levels without seeing that it's split by the hard gap of the probe. So that, it's positive to the soft gap.
But soft gap implies that there are a lot of quasi-particles around, right? So it's not just one electron on the dot, there are just some stuff, basically, right?
Well, when we do transport, electrons flow through the dot. And so that's okay. But they still tunnel one by one through the dot. Yeah. Okay, so an important tool for us is also to do magnetospectroscopy of these Andreev levels because it teaches us about their spin, but it's also an ingredient in the Kitaev chain model. So we need to lift the spin degeneracy, right? Kitaev chain is a spinless fermion, so we do that by magnetic field. So this is a slide that shows you what happens with magnetic fields. So this is a strongly coupled regime where these half loops don't overlap in the middle at zero magnetic field. But then when we apply magnetic field, there is Zeeman splitting going on. And so states come down and they do touch at finite field. So this is kind of a parity transition induced by magnetic field, and we can bring the loop back by applying a finite field, because Andreev levels shift with Zeeman energy. So what happens is described in this simple plot. We start with a single ground state and the doublet excited state, and this is the energy that we see here from zero bias to this resonance. And then Zeeman splitting of the doublet makes this energy difference less and less until there is a transition point where ground state becomes doublet. This is this regime here. Now, if this is a function of gate versus bias. Now, if I park my gate at different points along these lines and do magnetic field scans, I typically see resonances that split and go through each other. So this is an Andreev bound state that does a Zeeman splitting. This branch is vague because it goes above the gap. And this one goes into the gap. They cross and they pass each other. For many different gate settings, it looks like that. One curious graph, of course, is this one. There is a fine-tuned graph where we sit right next to this loop end. And so here we see two states come down and stick around zero bias for quite a long range of field. Then you can also see vaguely in the background the superconducting gap remaining finite to one Tesla. So if I just showed you this one plot, you might think this is a Majorana fermion, but if you look at all of them together, you see that it's not. It's fine-tuned to look like a Majorana. So it's important to do a range of gate scans to know what you're dealing with. Okay, that's one dot. I'm going to move on to two dots. Okay? Yeah?
Is it not true that if this phase transition between a singlet and a doublet, where my number doesn't become well-defined, that really is a Majorana fermion living on the dot?
Yeah, so some people would say that, as long as it's a state that sticks to zero bias, it is a Majorana. And that may be true. My definition of Majorana is based on that topological criterion, Ez greater than delta plus mu, and that is not satisfied here. So this is not a Majorana that is on the a bound state of some bulk topological phase.
But the actual definition is gamma is equal to gamma dagger. There's some degeneracy here.
Right, but there is no robustness here to this state, right? And this is a trivial state at one end, right? There is no partner on the other end. If it is a Majorana, it is not one that is very interesting to me. Okay. So now two dots. It's actually the same device, just a different tuning of all these gates. So I showed you that we could make one dot. Now we add another dot on the couple to the left superconductor. So it looks like this in the nanowire, two kind of volumes. And there is a tunnel barrier in between. And in the data that I'm going to show you, we tune it such that this barrier is the highest. There is a technical reason for that. So in this two-terminal geometry, there needs to be a bottleneck somewhere to resolve sharp lines. So if everything is wide open, all the line widths will be very broad. And so it will be very difficult to get anything meaningful out of the data. So in the ideal situation, we have the superconductor strongly coupled and then additional probes weakly coupled to probe the spectra. But that makes a more complicated fabrication. So we haven't done it yet.
One other thing I don't understand in this picture is why am I not cross-sensitizing the nanowire? Why am I treating it as just a semiconductor?
Oh, this is exactly what happens. So I just break it into, you know, the proximity effect is the induction of Andrea bound states in the dots. Yeah, that is the proximity effect. So the gap on the dot is the energy of the Andrea bound state. That's the energy to the highest single particle state. So this is how proximity effect looks in sort of 0D. You have Andrea bound states. Okay, so the full system then looks like this. It's two copies of what I just talked about. Andrea bound states here, Andrea bound states here, and they're tunnel coupled. This is another schematic. I have four different ways to represent the same thing here. You know, there is an Andrea process by bouncing off of a superconductor, and then there is either a reflection off of this tunnel barrier to go in around this loop, and occasionally there is a tunneling across, and then Andrea process here. So there is a two tunnel coupled Andreev states. And so this is already an interesting system, sort of understudied. I think they were made accidentally before us, but they were not made in an intentional way and studied systematically. So what's different about two dots versus one dot? Well, you can still have singlet and doublet states, like I described to you. You can also have a low energy subgap triplet states. So that's one difference. How can you have triplet states? Well, you have spin here and spin here. They can couple as a singlet. They can couple as a triplet. The energy, the singlet-triplet energy in this case is very low because the two spins live in different orbitals, right? So it's a molecular triplet state. And so that's the green line here. These are spectra calculated by my colleague David Pecker. And these might look familiar to those of you who worked with double quantum dots. So there are sort of anti-crossings between singlet 1-1 and singlet 0-2. 1-1 meaning one particle here, one particle here, and 0-2 meaning both particles on one side, or 2-0 being both particles on the other side. And so when the singlet and the singlet states are resonant, they are anti-cross. There's just tunnel coupling of a particle across this interface. And this axis is then called the detuning axis. So what we do here is we sweep energy levels in the two dots against each other, like that. That's the detuning. And the inset shows the parallel shift, so when we tune them like that together. So we can map out all these spectra. The blue lines are doublets, triplets, singlets. And so there is sort of a more elaborate counting of states that's involved with double dots. Okay, let's see some data. So this is a double dot parity stability diagram. So this is a scan of left gate versus right gate. So these tune the chemical potentials energies on the two dots versus each other. At a certain source drain bias, which is not very large, and you have these features in these plots where the points are the sort of parity degeneracy points. So if you cross this line, you're adding a particle to one of the dots. If you cross this line, you're adding a particle to the other dot. So this is a very common counting for double dots, semiconductor double dots, except these are all Andreev states. And one way you can see that is because they have these arc shapes connecting these points. So these kind of concave arcs, which are also reproduced by our model. That's your signature that these are Andreev states that you're looking at, not sort of normal semiconductor states. So in a normal semiconductor, this kind of stability diagram is a honeycomb. So there are straight lines connecting these, and there are straight lines going this way. So there is a bunch of honeycombs. Those are the honeycombs are produced by just capacitive coupling. And the superconducting double dot gives these arc shapes. So where do the arc shapes come from? I'm going to show it to you in a minute.
The asymmetry between on the epsilon axis, basically.
Yeah, a good point. Sorry, I forgot to mention it. I was going to say it. So this is spin blockade. So when you have a transition between 1-1 and 0-2, you can have this spin blockade where transport is suppressed because you have filled into a triplet state. And you cannot move the spin across because that would require putting two spins of the same orientation into the same orbital. So that's the Pauli exclusion principle induced suppression of transport, which we see here. And this is very important because it allows us to put all these numbers on the diagram. So that means the middle region is 1-1, and the other regions, you know, all the other numbers follow from that. So that's the odd parity, and that's thanks for reminding me to talk about this. This is sort of crucial for the next few slides, that this is the odd region, and this allows us to unravel the entire spectrum of the molecule if we have that information. So the difference between this plot and this is a conductance and this is raw current. These are the same regimes. Okay, so these are more examples. I think when you see a lot of the plots, maybe just, you know, look at them all together. You appreciate that these are really arcs and there are many interesting features inside these regimes that can all be understood by Andreev levels. But in terms of the asymmetry, for example, it can also be flipped. So here, this one is suppressed and this one is suppressed. In the other one, and that's because we flip bias. So this is also very consistent with spin blockade. The bottom row and the top row are different by coupling between the dots. So when you couple the dots more, you see more complicated features. You also see more current, but they also become broader. So we tend to work in this regime where we see a little bit narrower lines, so we can know precisely what the lines are doing. Now let me explain where the arcs come from. So this is the parity diagram, and now we do different cuts along it. So we sweep gates in different directions, and then we expand the diagram in the bias direction. So this is sort of going from around minus gap to plus gap, and in each of these scans we see loops that you recognize from single dots. And in fact, the first one is very easy to understand. Here we scan across along this line, and so one of the dots is fixed, and the other one changes the occupation parity. And so this is just like the single dot case. One dot is on resonance, the other one goes through parity transitions, and it makes loops. Now the same loops are observed if we do the detuning cut and if we do the energy shift cut. So there are different details. For example, this one is anti-symmetric, this one is symmetric with respect to this axis. And we understand all these details. But then the reason why there are these arcs is because you're cutting through such loops. So imagine yourself in a room with domed ceilings, with different domes, and you're cutting through the domes at some height you will get some equi-height. Where you hit the wall, there will be some shapes which are also concave or convex, depending on the shape of the rock. So this is, you know, it's kind of a trivial effect. Now I have a slide on the model that we use to fit all this, and this includes the soft gap. So it's actually a DMRG calculation that David Pecker has done and Andrew Daly. But the slightly new thing here is that we represent our leads, our superconductors, as actually two leads that are tied to the same potential. And one of the leads is a perfect hard gap superconductor, and the other lead is a purely normal metal, Fermi liquid. And then they both tunnel couple to the dot. So this superconductor, you know, induces this coupling, these Andreev states on the dots. But when we want to look at subgap transport, like we always see these resonances around zero bias, we run a process where it goes from normal to superconducting, or even from normal to normal, through these Andreev levels that are induced by the other part. So it's like a two-fluid lead.
Do you actually understand where this soft gap comes from in the first place?
No. We have a guess. So this is the major question. There are numerous proposals for where it could come from, such as disorder at the interface, something in the superconductor itself. It's a ternary alloy, niobium titanium nitride, so it's prone to a lot of disorder just in the alloy compositions, which could trap quasi-particles at low energies. There are grains in the superconductor, and we are starting or in the middle of a big effort to address this issue by maybe trying other superconductors.
Is it really single channel wire?
It's a few channels. Yeah, it's tunable channels from zero to a few. Yeah, and you can even see conductance steps. But of course, we are here in the, a bunch of tunnel barriers. So these are zero D wires, but the electrons tunnel one by one.
But this model is kind of strange because the first thing it's going to do is going to induce the proximity induced superconductivity in this normal metal, no? In the model, theoretically.
I have to ask David if the model does that or if he turned it off somehow. It's an ad hoc model, but it sort of captures some of the aspects of the data. Yeah, but a full model would be desired, of course. Or maybe we can get rid of the hard gap and then we can live with a simpler model. But what this model does, it reproduces accurately this conductance within the gap. So this is sort of in the units of charging energy of the dot. I think gap is actually, in the lead, is assumed very large, just for the model purposes. It also reproduces these kind of loops as we change parity along different axes. And we understand where the loops come from. So the green lines tell you that, okay, you can calculate the spectrum and know which transition corresponds to each of the resonances. It also reproduces some of the negative differential conductance, so the blue regions and the red regions. So pretty happy with this model. At this point in time, it does a great job for us. And it kind of tells you what's going on with the soft gap. Okay. This is the magnetic field dependence, and this also we achieve quite good understanding. Magnetic field dependence of Andreev resonances in three different regimes. So this is a regime where each dot is filled to an even number of charges. So the ground state is singlet, that's for sure. And what we see here is something actually similar to a single dot. We go from a singlet ground state to doublet excited state, which Zeeman splits. And so we see a Zeeman splitting of the resonance at finite field. And then there is a zero bias region where state from positive and negative bias meet and stick around a little bit at zero bias. So again, we can get a zero bias peak, but you have to know, exactly where it's coming from. This is not due to Majorana in this case. And the transport model does a reasonable job of capturing this as well. Now, this is this kind of novel regime, which you can only get in a double dot, where you have one and one, and you can have these singlets and triplet states. And so this is our evidence for the triplet states. So here you only see one resonance at positive bias, one at negative, and they come apart. So different from this, there is no splitting. If you look at one bias direction, there is only one resonance. And so that's understood the following way. At any finite field, triplet is the ground state. It's the triplet with the both spins pointing along the field. The G factor is negative. The excited state is a doublet. So you need to have a different parity in the excited state and the ground state. But one of the doublet transitions is turned off because it requires a spin flip. So there is this cross here. So you only see one of them. Now this one moves with G mu B over 2. This one moves with G mu B. So the resulting transition that we measure moves as G mu B over 2. And then there are more complicated regimes with some kinked lines, which we can understand with more elaborate level diagrams, but also sort of we plug in the most reasonable thing, and in this even odd regime, we also understand what's going on. We can reproduce the kinks and the asymmetry. And we can also do that for all 9 of these states. Now, these are the experimental data, but there is in our paper, there is a matching theory simulation in all these 3 triangles. So the point here is that we have a good level of understanding of a double dot. Okay, so now there's like 5 minutes left, so let me speed through the single triple dot. Now this is a very preliminary data. The device is still in the fridge, and your input can influence what we do with it, or it's also okay to tell us to pull it out and do something else. This is a device which is a little bit different. There are 3 superconductors, left, middle, and right. And we define with the similar gates 3 dots, left, middle, and right. And so what is the idea of this experiment? Well, the idea is that with the right parameters, this dot will have a Majorana. This dot will have a Majorana. These will be the end dots, and this dot will be empty. Or will have nothing at zero energy. So that's sort of conceptually the fewest number of dots that you can be somewhat reasonably proud of having realized the Kitaev model. You can also do it with 2 dots, both having Majoranas, but I think this is having one topological dot in between is more convincing. So we operate this device in a regime where each of the dot is coupled to its superconductor, and then the tunnel barriers between them are relatively high, so higher than the couplings to the superconductors. And the first thing we do is we tune up Andreev levels in each of the 3 dots. So this is a gate of the left dot, gate of the middle dot, gate of the right dot. And these are all strongly coupled Andreev levels, meaning that they don't cross and make loops at zero magnetic field. So these are the gap features. And inside the gap features on each of the dots separately, we can see the Andreev states inside the gap. Now the algorithm from the theory paper tells us that we first need to tune up one dot, and then we need to tune them pairwise. So we're going to proceed along these lines. But first, let me look at this data in a slightly different representation. So these are Andreev levels that live in the parameter space of 3 chemical potentials, left, middle, and right. So let me plot it as a 3D plot, right? So I'll put on this axis data from V right. In this plane, I'm going to put data from V middle. And on the side one, I'm going to put V left. This is L perturbed here. And now this, I think this is useful to think about. This is sort of a 3-dimensional story of the evolution of Andreev states in these 3 dots. So because the tunnel barriers are fairly high, I can think of them as sort of independent axes for now, for what we have tuned up now. Right? Later, we can strongly couple them. But then let's look at this regime. So in the middle of each plot, here, here, and here, there is this kind of a symmetry point where Andreev levels touch or almost touch. Right? So then I can make a transition here, and there will be a point sort of in the middle of this cube which is some kind of a symmetry point. Now, what it reminds me of is a Weyl point, because this is where some kind of energy level comes down. Okay, I can tune it up a little bit more so that they precisely touch, or even I can make them cross and have two Weyl points split up. And so an open question that I don't know is, can I think of these as Weyl points? Is there anything special topological about these features in three dimensions? You may shrug it off as nonsense. There is a paper that predicts something like this in multi-terminal Josephson junctions. Now, the difference in this paper, they think about Josephson phases controlling the Andreev levels. So there is some kind of periodic control with a function of phase, whereas we do chemical potential control. But there are also similarities between these work. Anyhow, this three-dimensional cube, besides being distracted by Weyl point, tells you exactly what we're dealing with. And this is one way to unfold the cube and understand that it's really what's happening is that the independent tuning of the three dots. So for example, here we follow a procedure where we set the left dot to the symmetry point, and then we change the chemical potential on the middle dot, and then we sweep the right dot. And so when the middle dot is set to a position where its energy levels, Andreev levels, are far apart from each other, we also sweep the right dot, and we see that those energy levels don't come very close together. But as we move the middle dot closer and closer, we see that these energy levels also get closer and closer together. Yeah? So this is sort of sweeping through that symmetry point, and we can do that also for other combinations, M and L, and L and R. And so this is the equation for the resonance. You have to add up energy differences on all three dots, and then you'll get a resonance in transport through all three of them. Right? So this is the regime. And I think what that means is that they are weakly coupled between each other. So you just add the energies of the three dots to get the total transmission resonance. Okay, then we do the double dot tuning. So these are the parity stability diagrams now, which I already explained to you from Andreev molecules, but now in a strong coupling regime. So we don't have loops. We have these concave shapes, and we cut through at some finite bias, and so we have maxima where we cross bias. So there are no parity transitions here, but there are Andreev states that dip below our bias threshold and make these kind of loopy shapes. But nevertheless, this shows that we can make a double dot between L and M, and we can make a double dot between M and R. And so by this pairwise tuning, we can demonstrate that this is a triple dot, the tunnel coupling between L and M, and between M and R, so there is a tunnel coupling between all three. So this is a triple dot. Okay, so now let's turn on magnetic field. Oh, yeah?
So last part, you again have some asymmetry for the left gate. It's again spin locate, or what is happening
there? This is not studied yet, so I cannot tell you for sure. It could be, but no, this is what it comes from, essentially, right? This is brighter and this is darker. I don't know what that is. Could be. Okay, so here are some magnetic field dependencies. So for different settings of L, M, and R, look at what we can get. We can get some zero bias peaks. We can get states that split and then come apart. This is, there is low current, very low conductance, because we're going through three dots. But nevertheless, there's a resonance, and it comes back down at one Tesla, so it makes this huge loop. We can make them, this is kind of a zoom in on this plot here. So you can see the two of them splitting and making a zero bias peak. And here we see zero bias peak kind of coming out of nowhere. This is a little bit similar to the science paper of 2012. This is a little bit similar to some other papers, like Weizmann paper or Copenhagen work. So with these dots, we can reproduce all kinds of zero bias peak data that's been done before. Now, have we already emulated the Kitaev chain? Have we made Majorana fermions? Well, not so fast. I'm not so sure. First of all, we're in the wrong regime for the Kitaev chain. So coupling to the superconductor is much stronger than coupling between the dots. for the Kitaev model to work, we need those two couplings to be the same. We need the same coupling to the superconductor and between the dots. So we need a much more open device. We haven't done that yet. We have charging energy on each dot, and that is not included in the simple models. So this is another consideration to think about what that does to the model. Nevertheless, already we have the right signatures, but we don't know if these come from one dot. I have shown you that I can have zero bias peaks in a single dot. I can have them in a double dot. Now I can have them in a triple dot. So, you know, we need to sort through these complications. I don't think any of this is fatal. We just need to be careful and consistent in analyzing all these features. So, for example, one attempt to be careful and consistent is to park our gates in many different positions inside this parity stability diagram and scan magnetic fields so we can observe a transition from this big splitting that goes to one Tesla. The splitting shrinks, makes kind of a zero bias peak, and if we keep going, here we have this very tightly confined zero bias peak that comes also at very low fields. So we, you know, from doing these kind of systematic studies and exploring different parameters, of which we have now a lot, we can maybe achieve some understanding. This is my last experimental slide, where you see what happens as a function of gate. You can actually see at zero magnetic field, there is already zero bias peak in some region of parameters. It's a very faint state, but as you turn on the field, it spreads and becomes this well-defined state. So another thing that is possible here is supercurrent. There are three superconductors. It's a three-terminal Josephson junction in principle. It's hard to believe that it could be there because the conductance scale is so tiny. It's 0.0004 of 2 squared over h. Nevertheless, our measurement is also very, very sensitive. So a very, 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 very tiny supercurrent could be detected in principle. So I put supercurrent here as one of the explanations. And this is my summary. Sorry for going a little bit over. So we explore these devices, triple dots, as sort of quantum emulators. The first steps to do that is to understand the states on each of the sites of the emulator, then to try to construct simple chains, 1, 2, 3 dots. That seems to be working. The next steps are to tune it into the interesting parameter regimes, to play with the couplings, the interaction strength, and to see what we can get, whether we can learn something about the Kitaev model and the Majorana fermions. I'm happy to thank my graduate student Zhao and Su, who did all of this work, and David Pecker, who's leading the simulation effort, and thank you for your attention.
Towards the end, where was the spinoid coupling entering in the model?
The way I understand it is, so you have one dot here and the second dot here, and as you tunnel from one dot to the other, you rotate the spin a little bit.
So how is it modeled? I mean, this, how was it entering the model?
So I think you can model it different ways, but for example, you can just model it as coupling between singlet and triplet states, which is normally not allowed, or between spin up and spin down. So without spin orbit, that's not allowed, but you can put that tunneling matrix element in, and that's your spin orbit effect. That's my very naive understanding.
So this Kitaev model is kind of short, right? So it's chained, so it's three.
Yes.
So you're not supposed to have actually zero energy states because they just split, right?
Yes.
So why are you interpreting or hoping to interpret the zero bias anomaly from another anomaly, zero bias conductance as a Majorana?
So far I've done very little interpretation. You know, I listed the possibilities, of course, but generically, you expect in such a short chain the two Majoranas to still be split. And there is a fine tuning of parameters where they're not split.
Is this where you are?
We don't know. Right? We tune up the system, we turn on the magnetic field, we see zero bias peak.
But it's a stable peak, right? It stays there, right? If you change
stable in field. And I showed you what happens in gate, right? You explore gates, and sometimes it's split. So here it's split. Here it's starting to split here. Here it's split a lot. And in some other regime, it's not split. So
it just coming from a single dot? Then?
No. It could be coming from a single dot. Yeah. This is not clear yet.
I just want to comment. So, I mean, we have studied Kitaev model with also smaller numbers, and like, you know, numerically we find for 2 and 3, I mean, odd and even number, you get, I mean, for even you get splitting, and for odd you don't get splitting. So that's something also worth checking.
Just very robustly for odd number of dots.
But you don't, it's just for Kitaev model, not for this, you know, particular physical realization. But just if you study Kitaev model and look at transport, and look at even an odd number of sites, then we find that there is splitting for even case, but not for odd. And we have a cartoon picture for why that is the case.
Okay.
It's just based on the channels of transport that you will get splitting or no splitting.
So I would say, you know, if you saw what we do, to change the number of sites is, well, it's possible, but it's not my favorite thing to do, right? I would rather change couplings and chemical potential settings. And to go from 2 dots to 3 required us to redesign the leads, for example. So we can go back to 2. To go to 4, we should probably redesign the leads again.
But we could talk later, because just to see whether this could be checking some of these things.
But this transport with odd number of sites would not be Majorana's, right? What you study?
Yeah, I mean, we just looked at the Kitaev model and also for finite size. And yes, you have, I mean, you get splitting for even case just because the channels, like how you're connected to the lead, you either have a symmetric mirror reflection, or for the odd case, you don't have that splitting, but you still have, I mean, you have Majorana. Yeah, we can talk about
that. So I'm wondering if you've thought about other forms of sensing besides conductance here, for example, direct charge sensing, or even like cavity coupling, which I know has been a big push in the field.
Yeah, those are all possibilities. My first modification to the present geometry would be to just add more tunneling probes, which are maybe normal and weakly coupled on the side, but still do tunneling. But yeah, charge sensing is can also tell you essentially the same stuff. But you know, and cavities. I mean, it's a big unresolved question how good these cavities behave at finite fields. So that's still not clear. They work great at zero field, you know, for superconducting qubits and so on. But they degrade very fast as you apply field. Eventually, I think we will develop other, you know, charge sensors, and certainly for longer chains. That's more practical.
Okay. There's one more question.